Our next guest is, like Falake said, amazing John Howard. He has nearly 40 years of development experience. He's on the Sky show as well. He is, I think words are an underestimation of some people. And that definitely applies to John. So I don't want to say anything anymore. I think you will see the wisdom, you will see the knowledge, and you'll see the hell of multi-million pound portfolio that he's built for himself at the back of that as well. So please allow me to welcome John Howard. John, you're muted.
Jack, thank you so much for your very kind invitation, and thank you for inviting me to this wonderful three-day bonanza, property bonanza. Amazing how you've organized all this, and the speakers have been, you know, extraordinary, some of them. So congratulations to that. So what I'm going to talk to you today about is sourcing good property deals, because I think that I've taken a section from my Making Property Work For You seminar, which is quite popular, because and the most popular part of it is how to find deals, because that's what everyone wants, isn't it? Everyone wants to know how to find deals. So, and I find it difficult as well, by the way, you know, just because I've got 43 years experience and I know a few people, it does help, of course it helps, but also I'm in the same boat as everyone else. And actually, when you think about it, you're always strongest in your local area. So for instance, Jack, whereabouts do you live, Jack?
I am in Slough, so Middlesex and Slough area.
Yeah, call it London-ish. So you've got a really good area to find deals, I'm sure. But yeah, you know far more about Slough and Middlesex than I'll ever know. Yeah. So when people say, "Oh, you know, I can't find deals," you know loads of people, John. Well, I do know loads of people, but I don't know anyone in Slough. So technically, you know, and Jack's experience anyway, so it's a slight unfair comparison probably. But you know, so basically, what I'm saying is that you're all strong in your local areas. You know, you take your kids to school, or you socialize in that area. So automatically, you know, people, and it is a people person. And what I find very frustrating sometimes is that everyone's what I call a keyboard warrior. So they're very good which I'm not very, very good at that, to be fair, but a lot of people are really good at banging out emails to everyone. Great, which is fine. And I agree that helps, and be able to do Zooms like this is wonderful. But, you know, pressing the flesh, there's a reason why politicians go around knocking on doors, pressing the flesh at election time and any other time they can do it, really. And also, you know, the publicity, because they know that personal connections is what it's all about. And with property, more than many, many other businesses, it's all about personal connections. It's about who you know. You know, who can you pick the phone up to? Who can help you with this? Who can help you with that? And these communities, and Jack's community especially, you know, it is all about contacts and sort of helping each other more than it ever used to be, probably, because it's easier to do now. Because the only time I ever met other property developers and investors was at auctions. Auctions were the big thing when you get together and you meet everyone, you'd have a deal. And I talk about auctions a lot. As well, so you know, when I've got a seminar on auctions as well. So, you know, auctions were the only place, really, to be fair, where you could actually go and meet other like-minded people. Now there's all these wonderful, you know, not just Zoom events, but live events where you can, I speak at and other people speak at, I know, all over the country. So the networking is far, far better than it ever was before. But you have to take advantage of that, but also you need to think outside the box. So it's okay networking with like-minded people, but of course you're all probably chasing similar deals. And years ago, I was always taught, when you go and look at a property, never park outside that property, park down the road. Because if it's local, yeah, and people know you, you park outside, they know there could be a deal happening. So you want to park down the road and walk up to the property. Anyway, we're going to go through a whole load of different sourcing deals, many of which you will know already. If I miss any out, I want you to shout out and say, "John, come on, what about this? Don't you do this? I do." So that'll be great. So Ruby is very kindly going to put up on the screen for me, because I'm hopeless at it. And Ruby's coming specially to do it today. So thank you, Ruby, for that. the list of hopefully if we can. If it works.
It's not working.
No, we can't get that bit to work for some reason. So I'm going to listen. Sorry, we can't get that bit to work. What I'm going to do, I'm going to shout them out as we go, and then we can write them all down. Any ones that I talk about that you don't do, just write down. So I apologise for that. We've had all sorts of technical problems this morning. So okay, well the first and obvious one is estate agents, isn't it? So in the old days, estate agents were really the main focal point for most people who wanted to find property deals. These days, I find that a lot of people seem to, I wouldn't say distrust estate agents, because they've always been distrusted, and I own 6 estate agents, so I can probably say that. But what I would say, I think the relationship between estate agents and property investors and dealers has changed. Which I think is a shame. I spoke at a really good event the other week, and there were 60, 70 people there, and there wasn't one estate agent, not one estate agent there. Now, in the old days, most people who became property developers started off as estate agents. That's how they started off. And it's like an apprenticeship. Now, the apprenticeship these days is very different, because there's all this property education, and even I do some seminars now and again, to help people along that journey. So the relationship between, has changed, because of course, when you were an agent and then you became a developer, you knew all the agents, you knew all the other agents, and you could talk to them. You could, it was easier to do deals with agents in those days because the laws weren't so strict. And it's a good thing that they are strict now, and they were properly. But in the very old days when I started, you get an estate agent who went to look at a house, he'd agree to buy it. It's normally he would agree to buy it off the vendor, and then ring me up and say, do you want to buy this house? I've agreed to pay, 100,000 for it. Would you give me 120 for it? And you go, yeah, okay. And then before I've even bought it, I've sold it on to someone else for 130 or 140. Now that sort of thing doesn't happen anymore. You have to, if you have any interest, you have to declare it, rightly so. So, it's much more professional than it ever was. And so estate agents, you could argue, are slightly less important than they were. And Rightmove, of course, and all these other portals have really changed the role of an estate agent. So, in the old days, the estate agent would have a top drawer or even a bottom drawer. And in the bottom drawer were the deals, in the top drawer were the normal agency stuff. And so, well, I don't want to look at the top drawer, Martin or Michelle or whoever. I want to look at what's in the bottom drawer. Oh, well, I've got this deal, but you're going to have to do this, that, and the other. That has changed. And of course, they just whop everything on Rightmove now and let the market do the rest, really. So it is difficult. However, an agent still has the opportunity to help you. You need a good relationship, that opportunity. And in my book, I talk about, getting a good relationship with an agent, going to see them, taking in some coffee and some donuts when you get to know them a little bit, go once a month, every 3 weeks. Don't be a pain in the ass to them. Never go between 8:30 and 9:30, because they're having their backsides kicked normally for not selling enough houses and all the rest of it. The morning meeting, it's called, and so on. So you've got to pick your time, and especially if you want to see a particular person. And one trick I use sometimes, and I still use it now, is if I want to get in with an agent because I know they've got other deals coming up, even if the property they've got is not one I want to buy, I don't think, I'll still make an appointment to go and see it with them and ask them if they've got time for coffee afterwards or whatever. So take less time to look at the property than they've allowed. So it gives you time to then have a quick coffee with them, get to know them, get that relationship going, let them understand exactly what you want to buy, exactly what you want to buy. And by the way, if you say, oh, I want to buy anything, they'll get you, they'll find you nothing. You need to be specific about what you want to buy, because if you're not specific, to be honest with you, you know, an agent's not going to phone you up when, if and when he's got a deal. She's not going to phone you up and go, you know, I've got just the thing you're looking for, because she doesn't know what, you know, what you're looking for. So there are opportunities still with estate agents. I believe there still are. I think that it's important that they know what you want. It's important they know what you can pay, what you can go to, how much money have you got to spend. Sometimes, they'll sell a property, it falls through again, and the vendor just needs a quick sale from someone the agent can rely on. And that's really important, that you have a reputation. You might have a reputation for being hard-nosed, if you like, and I like to think I've got a reputation of being hard-nosed, but I've also got a reputation for coming through on a deal and doing what I say I'm going to do. And that's really important. So, you know, your ability to perform, if you like, is vital, because it's your trademark, it's what it's all about. And if they can trust you, then they will come with other deals, because the last thing an agent wants is for you not to be trusted, also for them not to trust you, because then they won't come again. And if you sound like you're a complete amateur and you don't know what you're doing, they're not going to speak to you again either, because they need to know that they can rely on you. If you say you're going to do the deal in 28 days, say you're going to do the deal, do it in 28 days. If you can't do it in 28 days, tell them it's going to be 6 weeks, and then do it in 5 weeks, because you'll be the hero. Okay, so under promise and over deliver. Agents hate delivering bad news to their clients. And the other thing to remember with an agent, he's not working, or she's not working for anyone, really, to be fair. They're working for themselves. So the difference in commission between selling a property for $210,000 and $230,000 is nothing. And any vendor that thinks that they are, you know, they're working really hard for them is probably slightly naive. What they are doing is they might well be doing their best for their client indirectly, because the client might say, well, I want $250,000. And the agent, if he's got the balls or she's got the balls to say, well, it's only worth $225,000. And sticks to them and they sell it for $225,000 quickly, then that's better than having it $250,000 and on the market for a year, probably for the vendor. So, you know, there is some sense in what an agent says to the vendor. But the difference in commission is so little. Don't ever think that they're worried about getting another, you know, 20, 30,000 for their client, because the commission they're talking about to do so is peanuts. Makes no difference to them at all. And all they're trying to do, that I always call them pleasers. So they're what an agent's always trying to put two sides together. They'll be saying one thing to you, one thing to someone else, to, you know, one thing to the vendor, one thing to you if you're buying, and vice versa. They're trying to appease both parties and get the deal done. And to be fair to them, that's what they're getting paid to do. So an agent still can be useful, but I don't think enough people engage with them anymore. I really don't think enough people engage with a residential agent. And that's one thing that I think in your local area you can do. I accept you can't do all over the country, of course you can't, but you can do it in your local area. And you'll be amazed how few people do these days. So that could give you a really, really good advantage, over them. So the next thing I'll talk to you about is commercial agents. Now, for many of you, the commercial agent is probably on, I've got a list here of about 20 different ways of finding property deals. And I think the commercial agent probably, along with the auctioneer, which we'll talk about next, I think the commercial agent is probably, for many of you, the best route to market, find a deal, in other words. So, and the reason for that is that they're obviously only dealing commercial property. That's the first thing. Second thing is that they are normally chartered surveyors, so they're qualified, which means their clients tend to listen to them more and take their advice more than they would if they're a residential agent. That's very important. very, very important. Also, a number of the commercial properties that they have for sale will be owned by large companies, companies that perhaps have owned the properties for many years. They've written it down in their books, and there's no personal connection with a residential property. There's also a personal connection to the buyer, to the seller. You know, they've lived in it, they brought up four children, got divorced or whatever it might be. but with a commercial property, there's none of that baggage. So if a commercial property has to be sold, it has to be sold. So it's a lot easier, in my view, to negotiate sometimes with a commercial agent and a commercial vendor than it is a residential one. So commercial agents, qualified, terrible at marketing property. They are the worst at marketing property, which is great news for you guys. Great news, because the worst marketing there is, the better it is for you, because hopefully not many people will know about it. Hopefully it'll be under market value and all the rest of it. So a commercial agent is likely to have the types of deals you're looking for. Commercial to residential, of course, is the big one. PD isn't as easy as it used to be. Hopefully everyone understands that. The new rules have made it much, much more difficult, in my view. Ranjan, I know, my good friend, still bangs on about it constantly, and he's right to do so. And in London, certainly, you know, I accept the fact that if you can chop the back of a shop off and make a small one-bedroom flat, it's worth doing in London. Try doing that in Burnley, Blackburn, Hartlepool. Good luck, because it isn't worth doing. So it's horses for courses. Depends where the commercial property is, of course, and the rules have got more difficult, especially for the bigger schemes. So I was on the Zoom yesterday with someone with our joint venture fund, who came to us and said, look, John, I really like this deal. I think it's PD. It was 23,000 square feet or 2,000 something square meters. It's not PD. We've got to go for full, you know, anything over 1500 square meters now, you've got to go for full approval, which brings in, you know, social housing requirements and all the rest of it. So it isn't as easy as it was, but certainly with commercial agents, they will definitely have opportunities for you. They are professional. You'll find that their clients listen to them more. So the opportunity to buy a property at the real price it's worth, rather than just what some agent, a residential agent, thinks it should be, or the vendor thinks it should be, is different, because the commercial agent will take into effect and will know, hopefully, being professionally qualified, will know roughly what the cost of the building work will be and everything else. And they can explain that to the client better, and the client will accept it from them. So, you know, it's definitely worth pursuing commercial agents in the areas where you want to do. And again, you can't go and see them the same, because they don't have a shop front quite often, but you can certainly ring them up, you know, go and view a property that they've got, even if it's not quite what you want, get a relationship going with that person. And then you'll find what else they might have coming up. Very, very, very good way, incredibly good way of finding deals. And over when I think back, I mean, let me, you know, we'll perhaps have time at the end, talk about one or two deals I'm doing at the moment. But I mean, you know, when I look back at the deals I've done in the last 2 years, which haven't been that many, because the market's been very, very tough for everyone, but it's getting easier. The market is changing. Property is going to become, it's not such a hot market. You might have noticed things starting to stay on the market longer. You know, you can't have inflation at the rate we've got it, and all the problems economically, and the fact that with this country, probably along with Europe's going to go into recession, and expect property prices to keep rising. They won't, because people at the bottom end now at the moment, you know, the average is the first time buyer needs something like 7 times income to buy. And traditionally, when it goes to 6 to 7 times income to buy, the alarm bells ring. Something happens, because it breaks. It can't go any further. So I think everyone needs to be a little bit cautious on that one. But we can talk about that if we have time at the end, I'm sure. And everyone's got a different opinion. You know, other people who have spoken in the last 3 days may well have a totally different opinion to mine. My opinion's based on 40 years experience, and I've survived 3 property recessions. So I think, you know, I'm qualified to say, to speak on it. Whether I'm right is another matter. But, you know, you pay your money and take your choice. So commercial agents, really, really important, super important in my view. The next one is very important as well as auctions. So basically in the UK, there are about 3,500 properties sold at auction every month. 3,500 properties. They're all in a catalogue, all online now, just about. It's so easy to look at them all, find them, analyse them, decide which one you want to buy, which one you don't want to buy. The problem you have, well, it's good and bad. Auctions are good and bad. The reasons it's good is because there's 3,500 properties for you to have a look at. And the reason it's the reason you've got to be careful is because there's a problem probably with every one of those properties. Every one of those properties, assume there is a problem with them. It's up to you to work out what the problem is, and it's up to you to make sure you can solve that problem, fix that problem. If you buy at auction a property that you cannot fix, then more for you, you shouldn't be buying it. So for instance, a problem that you may not be able to fix would be a next door neighbor that has got, you know, I'm exaggerating probably slightly to make the point, but a next door neighbor who's got loads of cars in the garden and mess and all the rest of it. You know, you can't deal with that. So who's going to buy a house next to that property? Who's going to buy it? Okay, if you're going to keep it and retain it, maybe it's still worth doing if it was discounted. But I mean, on the whole, that's not a problem you can fix. That's not a problem you can fix. If it's got a crack in it and the structural engineer says, well, you know, it's an old crack, check the drains need doing. Yes, you can probably fix that, repair the drains and hold on to it for over a year so it's monitored. After that period of time, you can probably sell it with a clean health bill, if you like, bill of health. So with auctions, great, great opportunities to buy deals. And it's no coincidence that the last few deals I've bought, let's have a think. Certainly last year, I bought 2 or 3 at auction. After the auction is also a very good tactic. So wait, don't worry about looking at them before the auction, see what hasn't sold, and then have a look at what hasn't sold, because the seller then is on the back foot. Up to the auction, the auctioneer is all cocky, thinks they can sell it, this, that, and the other. When it hasn't sold, the game changes. You suddenly are on the front foot and the auctioneer is on the back foot. And one reason the auctioneer is on the back foot is because they only have 1 month to sell the property after the auction. And take it from me, I used to own Auction House UK, 40 odd franchises across the UK. Take it from me, I sold my shares 3 years ago now. They don't care what price they get for it after the auction, because they need to sell it. They've only got a month to sell it in, otherwise they normally lose the instruction. It goes to another auctioneer or goes back into the open market where it's probably come from. So the success of Auction House UK, and we bought it in 2008 with 7 franchises. The success of Auction House UK was the fact that we worked with estate agents in order to find stock to put into our auction. So if you've got an estate agent who's had a property to sell and it's fallen through 2 or 3 times because of perhaps a survey, then rather than lose the instruction to another agent, they've persuaded the vendor, the owner, to put it in an auction with us, and then we shared the commission with them. And that's what helped Auction House to grow so quickly and become number one in the UK. That and Homes Under the Hammer, because they're constantly filming at auctions. So that was always handy as well to have that going on. So so auctions are super important. Not every property that an auctioneer looks at ends up in the auction. So make a relationship with the auctioneer. The auctioneer is always desperate for stock. So for instance, if you meet them have a chat with them and say, well, I might have the odd property coming up I can put in the auction. They will be all over you like a rash. Whether you want to put the odd property in the auction or not is another matter. But you then become a potential client of theirs. A potential client will get looked after far better than someone that's not a potential client of theirs. So use what you have. Again, as I said, lots of property, they go and look at a lot of property that doesn't end up in an auction. But so those properties that don't end up in an auction get sold somewhere. So get a relationship with the auctioneer. The auctioneer might say, well, look, this one I went to look at, but it's not going to come in the auction. But I know you, I know the vendor wants to sell it. Why don't you da da da? And that's what you're looking for. So you're looking for, you're looking to buy where there's no competition. Auction, yes, there's competition, but if they've, if the auctioneer's got a property they've looked at and they're not going to get it put in the auction, then you may be the only one they've told about that, and you might be the only one who goes along and has a deal and buys it. So, you know, the auctioneer still gets commission, obviously, for introducing you. So I would really find who your local auctioneer is. And I would look after them. The IG group is very good. The IG group is very good because David Sanderman, a friend of mine, David did the forward for my auction book, which was very kind of him. I've known David 30 odd years. I've been buying and selling at auction 35 years. And David has every auction in the country now on a website. So you and all the analysis and everything, I think he gives you a 6-week free trial or something like that. If you mention that you've come through me, I'm sure you'll probably only get 4 weeks, not six, but you should be okay on that. So EIG group, every auction in the country is on there. Also, well, more importantly than that, every property that hasn't sold in the auction is on there as well. And for me at the moment, because auctions are still hot, for me at the moment, I'm looking at buying after auctions. I'm not worrying about bidding on the auction. And just a few quick tips on about auctions. So there's a few things you must not do, remember. So auctions, you must view the property. You must find out why it's on the market. One of the best ways is go and talk to a next door neighbor. They'll tell you everything. You must have the money to buy it or be organized enough. And you must get a legal pack looked at. If you don't understand legal pack, get someone else to look at it, a solicitor ideally, and advise you on it. So very, very important that you have the money. It isn't for the faint-hearted, but it's the trade market, and that's where some of the deals are. The other thing about the auction market, it's the barometer for the rest of the market. So when the auction market starts to slow down, the general market slows down 6 months later, 6 to 9 months later. Now, interestingly, one or two auctioneers are being nice to me at the moment. They're ringing me and saying, hi, John, haven't spoken to you for a while. I wonder why they're doing that. Probably because their market, they think, is going to slow down. The evidence at the moment really isn't saying that. I agree with a lot of people who are probably saying, well, John, auctions are too hot. They are at the moment. But when the auctions start to slow down, and the clearance rate of an auction at the moment averages about 80%. That will go down to 50% in the recession. So just remember that. So the auction market is a great barometer for the market overall. Okay. I'm going to have to kick on because I could talk all day on these subjects. Networking. Well, we spoke networking at the start. So networking, pretty obvious. Network, network, network. Meet as many people as you can. You know, don't be depressed when you meet them. And what I say by that, I talk at many events and I come away sometimes thinking, my goodness, what am I doing wrong? Some of these guys and girls are doing fantastic deals, this, that, and the other. Do you know what? A lot of people exaggerate, sadly. And don't feel, especially if you're new to the business, don't feel, I'm never going to do as well as that person or whoever, because quite often when you get to know that person or someone else says, oh yeah, it's not quite as good as that, this is what happened, that's what happened. So, you know, it's good to be humble. Some people aren't. Some people are out there telling everyone what they're doing, how wonderful they're doing and how much money they're making. You know, normally in my experience, you can halve what they say. So don't, when you're networking, don't feel, you know, that everyone's better than you. I'm sure you don't anyway, but don't ever get in that situation, because everyone has challenges. Every deal has a challenge. Every deal has a problem. It's solving those problems quickly. And that's how, you know, quite often with my consultancy stuff I do, you know, I spend a lot of time heading off problems before they happen for people. And that's really, you know, that's invaluable in my view. So networking, you're all good at networking. You're all on here today. We're all working. I'm working lunchtime on a Sunday, so that's a good effort. Well done, Jack, for getting me to do that. Property clubs, well, that's networking again, isn't it? So property clubs, same thing, you know, crack on. Events, again, same thing I've got down here, events. Online is quite interesting. So online, you know, most of you, if not all of you, are far better online than I am. There are lots and lots of properties that come online. A few years ago, I actually bought a property that was on a website. Trying to think which one now. It wasn't a property website. It was another sort of website. Wasn't eBay. It was something else. But anyway, it doesn't matter. My PA found it and said, look, this guy needs to sell quickly. And we had a deal. And sadly, he was dying of cancer, and he had a couple of sales that fell through. You know, getting the top price wasn't his priority. His priority was settling, you know, the situation before the inevitable happened, sadly. And I managed to buy that property and sell it on at auction. And by the way, selling at auction is great, because you've got, you know, the people who buy it have got 28 days to complete. So it's a great way of selling as well, auctions. So online, and all of you are far better than I am at online. You know, I've got a guy that came one of my first seminars, and he did a bit of mentorship with me. And I don't do a lot of mentorship because I'm so busy, but he did some mentorship with me, and he was a very smart guy, and he started a website buying houses for cash or something. I think at the last count, he's bought 42 or something. Keeps telling me how much money he's making, and said I should have done it with him, which I probably should have done. But there we go. So, you know, online, social media, same thing, isn't it, really? You know, lots of opportunities for social media. But once you've made that contact, please pick up the phone to them and speak to them, you know, and meet them. Take them for a coffee. Now, we then go into slightly different areas. So investment companies. So many, many investment companies. Some of these investment companies have been around for donkey's years. And Bradford Property Trust would come to mind. At one point, they had 12,000 properties. And when they have a property that comes vacant, they've had a tenant in it for many years, they don't refurbish. They just bang them out for what they can get from. And of course, some of these properties, they probably paid 20, 30,000 for 20, you know, 50 years ago. So, you know, they need cash flow. They need turnover. So they might on any one month, some of these investment companies might want to sell 100 properties, 50 properties. And they normally sell them via auction. A lot of them sell them by auction, but there's no reason why you can't identify these investment companies, ring them up and say, right, what do you got to sell? Because you might find that, oh, I just got this one come vacant, we'll sell this one. So again, get ahead of everyone. They don't, you know, they don't particularly want to put them in the auction. So if you can possibly have a deal with them prior to them going to auction, or prior to them going on the open market. So a lot of these companies, you know, they do constantly have churn. They have properties coming up all the time that they want to sell, all the time. Bridging companies. Now, bridging companies, we'll include banks in this, because they are banks, really, and also crowd lending organizations as well, shall we? Let's include all of them in this. Now, they will all tell you that they hardly have any problems. Life is wonderful. They never repossess anyone. They always work with people, and everything is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, let me tell you, what a load of complete and utter, utter rubbish that is. Okay, let's get that out of the way first. Now, if I said to you, the last four deals I've bought have all been through a receiver where a bank has repossessed someone, and I'll name them all to you. The Wine Rack in Ipswich, that company went bust for 50 million. That's where I bought a part finished 150 flats and finished them over on Ipswich waterfront for 26 million. A care home went bust, bought after the auction off the receivers. What else? Colnebourne Avenue, Birmingham, 20 part finished houses that I bought after the auction. The crowdfunding platform went bankrupt. So did the builder. And my latest acquisition, which was on Thursday, which is in Scotland. It's only taken me 43 years to buy a deal in Scotland, Jack, so I've taken my time over it. and that is another crowd platform that's gone bankrupt. And the builder went bankrupt because of it, no doubt, and so on. 30-odd houses again. So you can see from just what I'm doing that and I'm only a tiny cog in a property industry, and you must remember this is an industry. Okay, this isn't for amateurs. If you know, even if you're just coming into it, you've got to think professionally and you need to take some advice. I don't believe you need to spend thousands and thousands and thousands, but I do think everyone needs to take some advice and have some support, and that might be from other like-minded people, or it might be from people like me. So bridging companies, banks, ring them up. Once you've got past the initial access issues, and there are access issues when you're dealing with these banks, because no one wants to admit they've got problems. You should then get a list off them of what problems they do have. And it's the same with building societies where they've repossessed houses, and some houses get repossessed because, you know, someone's died or there's a divorce and neither party wants to pay the mortgage. There's some crazy things that go on. So, or they've just gone bankrupt, you know, literally gone bankrupt, the people who own the house, which is very sad. So there's lots of, again, with building societies, lending institutions, all these types of people, they have loads of problems. They're going to have more problems going forward as well, whatever they say, interest rates going up, all the rest of it. So a great opportunity for all of you to find some deals that may not be off market, but certainly you might be able to nip them in the bud early before everyone else knows about them. Now, some of these people, some of these institutions, especially the building societies, and people like that who deal with residential houses and properties, many of them use asset managers in which to dispose of their assets. The reason they do this is because they don't like getting their hands dirty. They don't like the publicity that goes with it or anything else. No one, you know, if you're the Halifax Building Society, you don't want everyone to think you're a complete bastard and you repossess everything. The truth is they're not, but they're responsible, and they're responsible to the shareholders and everyone else. So they have to a certain extent, do exactly that. So they don't like to do that. So they get what's called an asset manager in to do it. And asset managers then charge them so much change the locks, put the property on the market and so on. Now, an asset manager working for, say, one of the big building societies has targets. The building society might say, well, we need you to be able to exchange on 100 houses a month that we're giving you, or something like that. So they're well worth talking to asset managers. At least you'll get an honest answer from them rather than the dishonest answer you'll get from the banks to start with. So asset managers, super important. Get onto them. Don't take no for an answer. Sound professional. Sound like you know what you're talking about. And I think you'll find that they will furnish you with a number of properties. Or if nothing else, we'll say, well, we put all our properties through Sequence Homes, who are the biggest estate agents in the UK, or someone like that. So at least you get a lead. You can then follow that lead through, which is really, really important. And the other people, of course, are the receivers. Now, these are the people who end up dealing with, you know, bankrupt property companies. And it's their job to dispose of the assets. Now, they're a tough bunch to deal with. They're the sharp end of accountancy. They charge a lot of money for doing what they do to their client, who are the creditors. But it's their responsibility to sell the assets off. So again, talk to the receivers. There's hundreds of receivers in the UK. Some don't really deal with many properties, others do. Find out which ones do. You'll be in competition with me, because that's exactly what we do. We spend our time talking to receivers, finding who's got what to sell, how much they owe on it, what can we buy it for, and all the rest of it. So I don't mind a bit of competition. Bring it on. Bring it on, Jack.
I'm coming
Bring
for on the competition. Yeah, so, I always say this, healthy competition is a good thing.
Yeah, I like to win.
Remember when Bill Gates actually invested in Apple because he wanted healthy competition? And when you look actually back at it, if it was only Bill Gates, he would have been penalized by the government. So eventually it turned out to be a good decision.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing is, you know, there's nothing wrong with buying a property cheap and selling on to someone else in your network that you know, you don't get arrested for it. It's totally illegal. You don't have to see the whole thing through. And quite often we will buy a property, sort out the problems with it, and then sell it on to another developer or investor. Don't sometimes think, well, oh, I haven't got the money to do it all up, but I can buy it. Well, great. If you can buy it, sort the problems out, you can sell it on again. So, you know, always don't look at it as one big lump. Sometimes look at it as a two or three phase arrangement, really. So receivers.
I think one of the things, John, people miss is that property is a business as well. And they don't look for problems. What they look for is, oh, I want to buy a property.
Yeah, they look for that. Jack, they're always looking for something too clean. I don't want anything clean.
It doesn't work like that.
If anything is too clean, I can't make any money. I'm looking to make profits. I want to make at least 30% net profit on every deal.
Exactly.
So I don't want clean. I want problems that I can solve.
That's what I meant. Most people don't do that.
All this rubbish about below market value, but oh, it's 10% below market value, 5% below market. Who cares? What is market value? It's an opinion. Yeah. And a 10% can be a 10%. 10% difference is an opinion. That's all it is, in my view. Is. You could get two agents saying two different things. So I'm looking for proper profits, if you like. It's not
I know what you mean.
English, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah. So so we've done asset managers, housing associations. My goodness, you know, housing associations, a huge source of property. They own thousands and thousands of properties across the UK, many of which are now they can't get EPC up to C. And because they can't get up to C, they are selling them off because it costs too much for them to refurbish it. And most housing associations now, all they want to do is buy new properties. So there's a great opportunity. Talk to your housing association, see what they've got to sell. Talk to them, engage with them, go and have a coffee with them. Say you can help them. It might be that you've got property that they were happy to rent off you for 5 years. Great, that's a relationship. Get that relationship going, cement it, see what else they've got. So housing associations, super, super important in all this. It really, really is. And you know, most of their properties will be in poor condition. It will probably be priced about right. Because again, you know, they are an organization, they need to sell probably certain amounts of old property to buy the new ones. So, you know, definitely worth talking to, without question worth talking to. And there's a reason why they're selling it. You know the reason. The reason is that they want new stock. For them to refurbish houses or flats is far more expensive than it is for you because of their organization. That's, you know, you can do it much cheaper than they can. So there's the angle. There is the angle. So use that angle to your advantage. Property sourcing agents. Now, I've got to be careful what I say here. So we are all really property sourcing agents. If I have a property that doesn't suit me, but my friend I know specializes in that, I'll ring him up or her and say, look, I've got this property. It's not for me. Tell them all about it. And I would expect a 2% finder's fee. So I'm a sourcing agent like everyone else. We all are. We're all hustlers. We're all ducking and diving, trying to make money. And I make a reasonable amount of money a year out of telling other people about deals that don't suit me and getting a fee. And my best deal finder person, I've worked with for over 30 years. And this year he's going to earn about 175,000, 180,000 off me. because I pay 2% fee to everyone, 2% fee. So which is the sort of standard really in the property industry. So if anyone says they want 3% fee and they want it up front before it's exchange contracts and all this, that's not normal. 2% fee, I mean, at times I've paid 3% fee because the market's tough. I can't find deals. So I said, I'll up it. I'll give people 3%. So I want them to ring me first. And the only reason they're going to ring me first is, well, two reasons. One, because they know I'm going to perform and do what I say. And the second thing, because I'm going to pay them as much, if not more, than everyone else. And I'm going to pay them the day we complete. Bang, paid. So sometimes I also pay them a 1% fee when we sell as well. So when we sell it on, especially if we sell it on quickly and we don't really work, I will give them 1% of what I've sold it for. Because I want that relationship. I want them to come to me. So sourcing agents, hugely important. Very important. And without sourcing agents, I wouldn't have been as successful as I've been. I could have done better. We can always do better, but I've done okay. So when you have a good sourcing agent and you trust each other, then that is a very important bond. And I've got, I said, two or three people around the country, you know, if they say to me, John, I've got this for you, you need to look at it. I always look at it myself, but I can pretty much sure that I'm going to buy it, you know, because I trust them. They know me. On occasions, if I haven't managed to get there because I'm so busy, you know, they will look at it for me and say, look, John Hare wants to buy this. Here's, you know, and then put me in touch with them. And then I approve funds. Proving cash funds is also very important these days. I know it's difficult for some people to do so, like it is for everyone, depending what you've got on the go. But somehow, these agents and the better agents especially want to see some sort of, you know, how are you going to buy it? So having someone who has got the cash and can help you prove cash funds if you haven't got it is very important, because the joke is none of us use cash on the whole to buy these things. We normally, you know, borrow 60% or something. But it's just the case that these agents and people want some confidence that you can perform. So housing associations, where are we going? We've got 15 minutes left. So property management. A lot of people think property management is pretty boring. It is, isn't it? Who the hell wants to be a property manager? Not me. Anyway, but the thing about property agents, they're very steady. They don't earn very big fees. So when a property comes empty and they know, first of all, the client wants to sell it, if you pay the property management company 2% finder's fee, yeah, they may well persuade the vendor who's got the property not to bother putting it on the market, but to sell it to you first. Happy days. That's what we call a good contact. So property management companies, especially if you're already their client and they manage one or two properties for you, it could be that you want to spread your property management around the place. I know some people manage it all themselves these days. I can't think anything worse, to be honest with you, but there we go. So, you know, you could put a couple with one agent, two with another, or whatever you do in a certain area where you want to be strong. And I think that's certainly worth doing. Or you might say you might have picked the best property management agent who's sharp and on the ball. They're not all, I know, and who will give you these opportunities, send them to you, you know, contact you. So again, look after them. Look after the people that look after you. I get so many people say to me, oh, I was meant to get 2% finance fee, but he's only given me 1% at the end. Well, you're not going to, and they go, well, I'm not going to work with them again. Well, no, I don't blame you. If it's 2%, it's 2%. And sometimes it's 2%. And I pay for them to go away for the weekend as a thank you as well. Yeah. I say to them, tell me which hotel you're going to and the bill will be paid. Because I've got to look after people. I want to look after them. I want them to contact me first before you lot. So now you lot are going to start charging, give them 3% and I'm going to be in trouble.
I have my own hotel, John, so I'll give them for free anyway.
Yeah, the biggest problem with hotels is if they've got a spa and it's a sexy weekend, you've got a problem, because those spas are a fortune, aren't they? As well I know with Mrs. Howard. So architects. Another good source, architects, especially if you're looking to build, to new build or convert, you know, an architect will now have clients who get planning but don't want to do it. So architects, super important. they're not business people. They're nice people. They don't understand business, but they are, you know, they have got really good contacts. So again, get involved with an architect. It might be that you can offer them some business in return, but certainly architects are really, really important. Property consultants, super important too, planning consultants, super important too, because again, planning consultants, you know, they get to know what's going on early on. They might say, look, this guy's failed on planning, but, you know, I think if we swap the planning around, I can get it for you. You know, they'll sell it subject to planning, which is great, you know. So planning consultants, super, super important these days. Again, look after them, pay them a fee. You know, and by the way, everything's on a portal, isn't it? Everything's public knowledge on the planning portal. So you can find out what's failed, what hasn't failed. Contact them. Contact the people who have failed on planning and say, look, I see you failed on planning. I'm sorry to hear that. But I might be able to help you. They may not want to spend any more money to get planning. Just had enough of it. I mean, if you tweak the planning you know, some people are very difficult and won't take advice and say, I want 4 units, I don't get 4 units, blah, blah, blah. When actually 2 units, you get planning for 2 units. So, you know, you can quite often work away at these people. So planning portals, super important. Planning consultants, very important. Who does direct to vendor? Oh. Looking for needle in a haystack, is it, Jack?
It is tough, but when they do come through, they're quite good.
Yeah, I personally haven't got time for it, and the reason I haven't got time for it is because, you know, I just think it takes too long. Now, don't get me wrong. In the past, I've managed to fluke the odd one, like you have, some of you have, and I'm delighted that you're successful doing it. I think the problem these days is that everyone knows what everything is worth.
Yeah.
Right Move. And even if they don't know, they've all got some clever sod who's a friend of theirs who advises them wrongly or correctly. And that's the problem. In the old days, that wasn't the case. You know, you get an empty house, you find out who owned it, and you could have a deal. These days, they want, you know, what it's worth done up, or, you know, you're constantly working the price down. It's just hard work. I'm not saying don't do it. If it works for you, great. I'm delighted. It doesn't work for me, but if it works for you, that's great. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. That roughly is about it. I wanted to give us 10 minutes, if that's okay, Jack, for questions. Is that all right?
Yes. So if I may request you to repeat this list like bullet points, so everyone kind of gets a like a very fast, quick view of it.
Can we put it up, Ruby, or not? No, we can't. The list. Can we send it to Jack and you could send it to the people on the call?
Of course I can. Send me a Word or a PDF or whatever.
Yeah, we'll do that. That's the answer. Because I'm sorry we haven't got it up on the... this is part of my Making Property Work For You seminar. And obviously we go into more details.
I will send this across to the whole list, no problem at all.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. If the list, just the people on this call, not
everyone. I will do that. No problem. Here's a question for you, John.
Yes.
And this is a question I asked. It's a question that stretches people's imagination to answer. If you were to choose 10 principles that you work on, you used on daily basis to be able to achieve what you achieve, what are those?
I'm not going to say 10. I'm going to say one.
Go on then.
Because you always ask me difficult questions, you do, Jack. live as well. I'm going to do one. And that is being mentally consistent. And my wife says, I've only got one talent. I say, what's that? She says, mentally consistent, dogged determination. Which, if you're going to only have one talent, that's not probably a bad one to have. So mentally consistent. I'm the same every day. I do the same every day. I'm not up. And then I'm not up for like a week because I've just bought something and then nothing for 2 months. I'm consistent every day. I've exchanged on Scotland on Thursday. It's a different law over there, but up there, but basically it's the same. It's different, but the same. But anyway, perhaps another session we'll talk about Scotland, but Scottish law and property law. But basically, you know, I'm I've exchanged. I haven't completed. I've exchanged, but I'm on the next problem. I'm on the next thing. I'm not sitting back saying, oh, you know, going on holiday for 3 weeks because I think I bought a good deal. So mental consistency. If it works, keep doing it and keep doing it. And also some things you do, especially when you're looking for a needle in a haystack, like some of you are, you know, with direct to vendor, it is about being consistent. It will work eventually. I know it will. And you might have to do it for 6-9 months. I used to put a small advert in the newspaper. Anybody remembers what newspapers are? You could put small adverts in them. And I used to put an advert in every week, every day of every week, properties bought for cash. And I'd get nothing for 3 months. I think, what am I doing this for? What? And then suddenly you get two people who'd say, oh, I've got the paper from 2 months ago when you advertised for this. Are you still looking for them? So it's all about being mentally consistent and keeping going. You know, I have years where I don't buy very many. I'm a deal junkie and I have years where I don't buy very much, but it doesn't matter because it's not the amount of deals you do, it's the quality of those deals. There's no point doing 10 deals and making no money. There's every point in doing one deal and making a lot of money. So it's not about, and I know it's difficult, I know everyone wants to get in and buy something and feel they're getting on with it, but I promise you that if you're patient, if you're organized, you're mentally consistent, and you're disciplined, those deals will come up. Believe in yourself, believe in what you're doing. They will happen. They will happen. And I'm not saying on occasions you have to perhaps change your strategy slightly sometimes, you know, but you can do that while you're still mentally consistent. And that's the key to it, is mental consistency.
Especially coming from the missus, that I believe is a great compliment. But I think the word in and itself, mental consistency, there is so much to it. It's almost like making sure that you stick to your routine and making sure you get the work done, which I believe, again, people have less clarity and they don't get a lot done in the first place. I meet a lot of people who may be determined and committed, but they don't get a lot of work done in the day. It's almost like, oh, how many deals have you looked at? How many agents have you spoken? I've spoken to 3 agents. In how long? In a week. 3 agents in a week? You can do that in half an hour.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting, Jack, because, you know, with my property seminars, and I've got 3 events coming up in the next 6 weeks, which is a lot for me because I don't do that many. But interestingly, we don't do any mindset. Because one, we haven't got time. As you can see, there's far too much to get through to stop talking about mindset for half the day, yeah. Or half the 2 days, which is the one in Dudley I do. So, you know, it's all about, we have to jump on it straight away. Got awful lot of content to get through. And if you haven't got the right mindset, with all due respect, you shouldn't be, it's dangerous. If you haven't got the right mindset, and you've got to be taught the mindset, then to be honest with you, you're in the wrong business. And many, many people, and this is where, I'm passionate about the education people are getting, because on some occasions, you know, some of these, I spoke to someone who came on a seminar a few months ago, and they said, John, after an hour, they stopped me. And I said, is it okay? You know, yeah. We've learned more in an hour than we did in 3 days. We spent an hour and a day and a half on mindset. Well, that's because some of these educators haven't got any knowledge. You know, they spend all their, they fill the courses up, the time up with mindset and all this silly business. You know, like I said, if anybody comes on my seminars, hopefully it's good fun, hard work, and no mindset.
Here's a question for you.
You've got to get straight down to business.
Yeah. Here's a question for you, John. I believe without, and like you said as well, without the mindset, this is all rubbish. You're not going to be able to achieve any of that. The problem with it's, I split it in two parts, right? It's the hard skills and the soft skills, right? If you don't have the right mindset or the consistency you were talking about earlier, if you don't have that, it's almost like irrespective of how much hardware you put in, if your software isn't right, it's just not going to help. And that's where I believe mindset comes in. I'm not saying it's either bad or good to cover. It doesn't really matter. Right? But I do feel that unless someone hasn't got the right mindset, it's a word that's too many times.
Yeah.
I call it psychological patterns. Okay. And if you don't have your psychological framework ready to achieve something great in life, irrespective of the hard skills you teach them, it's not going to help.
No, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I said earlier, we've got six estate agencies we own in Norfolk, finer country. So upmarket, sort of selling nice houses. It's a good business, good solid business. We've owned it for a number of years. And we have every person who work, we've got 42 people that work with us. They're all very talented people, handpicked by me. Okay. It's a good business. Not one of them, and I promise you, not one of them would make a property developer. But they're all expert in their property fields. They're all, you know, administrators or their valuers or whatever. Not one of them would. So, you know, when you have these property educators saying, oh, it's easy, anyone can do it, this, that, and the other. No, they can't. Not everyone's a captain of the ship. No. Not everyone's a leader. Not everyone can make the tough decisions that have to be made. Yes, consultants, and in my advanced property developing and investment seminar, we talk a lot about consultants because consultants look after you. You know, they stop you making mistakes. They stop you losing money. Or they help you make a lot of money, depending. And all these people are vital, but you still need to be able to make decisions. You are the decision maker. You know, they go back to their very nice executive five-bedroom house every night with no worries. They haven't put their arse on the line for the deal. They're getting paid for being a specialist in their field and being very educated. You're the one that goes back either to a mansion or to a one bedroom flat at the end of the day because you made a mistake. That's the truth, the other. So, you know, that's what you've got to remember. And 42 members of staff I've got, they're great people. They're very talented, but not one of them would make an estate agent. Would make a property developer. I promise you they wouldn't. They just haven't got that mentality.
So I'm going to ask you the last question. I'm going to pass it on to Flake. She might have some questions for you. So what kind of person, or what does it take? So if let's say the some of the members that you said may not make a great developer, what kind of person does?
Okay, so what I would say is mental. I would say, like we said, mental consistency is very important. Being able to make a decision is important, even if that perhaps sometimes isn't the right decision. You've made a decision. So I would say that the developers, and I'm talking about developers, not investors. Lots of people can be investors. It's a much slower, safer world. But with developing, it's a much more dangerous world. Much more, you know, there's a lot more money to be made out of it. And I can only go on the people I know and the people I've worked with over the years. And I've worked with some very successful very successful developers who I know are friends of mine. And I've got others that have lost 20, 30 million quid doing it. So what I would say is most of the developers I know, and not all of them most of them are my age, a bit younger than me, probably. I know some younger ones coming up, which seem very talented. But I would say the one thing, there is no gray areas. It's black or it's white. They're doing it or they're not doing it. They have an ability to make things happen. So an ability to lead, an ability to make those big decisions. They may not have a lot of ability when it comes to building a house. I've got no ability when it comes to building a house. These hands are soft. So no ability in terms of construction, quite often, no ability in terms of engineering. That's not necessary because you can buy all those trades in. You can buy all those, they're consultants. You know, even if you know a bit about it, it's probably dangerous. You're far better to take the advice of professionals. And also, they are prepared to surround themselves with the best people they can find. And they don't have an arrogance about them that they're successful. But they don't have any arrogance about bringing people in who know more than they do. The ones I know who don't like the fact that other people know more than them aren't very successful. The successful ones I know are very happy to pay decent money for the right advice and will surround themselves with the best people they can find. And that's what I've always tried to do throughout my career.
I do believe success is directly correlated to humility and healthy ego. Definitely.
I think so. I think everyone's got an ego. Everyone's got an ego. But you know, you need to keep it in check because it can cost you a lot of money if you get it wrong. Yeah,
for sure. It can cost you. On to Falake. She's actually co-hosting. You might have some questions, Falake.
Hello. Hi, John. Nice to meet you again.
Good to see you.
This is like a refresher for me because I heard you speak at the property investment show in London. So it's great to hear you again. And I was wondering when you mentioned about properties going to auction, you did mention that some properties don't make it. Can you give us an idea of what kind of property, what kind of reasons? So we know what kind of properties we're really looking for in those that don't make it to auction.
Okay. Well, first of all, in an auction, and I do a whole day on auction. So, don't ever bother looking at the first three or four lots in an auction, because the auctioneer knows they'll sell very well. They're priced very, very competitively in terms of guide prices are very competitive and they'll sell very well. A lot of the property that doesn't, some of the property doesn't come to the auction is because sometimes the vendor doesn't like what the auction is telling them in terms of price, or it's too soon and they need to sort a problem out, or there's a legal issue with it, so it can't be put in the auction. But of course, if you're prepared to wait a little bit, say, well, that's okay, you've got a problem, we'll sort, we agree to buy it, you sort the problem out, we'll still buy it, you know. So what I would say, it's not so much the type of property, it's the fact that for whatever reason, it might be probate and two of the three beneficiaries agree it should go in an auction and the third one doesn't. So, you know, there's lots of reasons why it might be that someone's told them that it's worth a lot more money to start with, but if you keep pursuing it, you'll get it at the right money. It might be that they, you know, don't agree. They're worried that it might just go too cheap in an auction, which is crazy because, of course, the owner of the property can dictate what the reserve is. So there's lots of reasons why it may not end up in an auction. It may end up, you know, going on the normal estate agency market. You might be able to nip it in the bud because they want to do it quickly, or it might be that they want the security of an exchange but a delay completion, and we all love delay completions, because delay completions, you can either sell it on to someone else, you can refurbish it while it isn't between exchange and completion if you get permission. You know, there's lots of angles. If you can get a delay completion, that's always good news. So I wouldn't say there's any particular type of property. I would say the reasons behind it. And of course, the auction is keen, because if they can't get in an auction, they have no other way of making money unless someone like you comes up and says, well, I'll give you a fee for finding it for us. Oh, you got it. Great. Can you talk to the vendor and try and do an off market deal?
Fantastic. Thank you. The other question is, I mean, we've had a whole 1.5 days now so far, and everybody yes. has mentioned about relationship building, which we've heard that from everybody that has spoken. Yes. And thank you so much for, you know, going through the other ways of finding deals and, you know, what we're thinking about, how to think like the other person. So what they want, really, and we can then, you know, be able to meet that need. The question though is, how do we meet these people? What kind of places? Because they don't go to normal networking meetings as such. I mean, you know, a lot of them would not do that. You know, is there any tips you can give us as to where to find some of these people?
I'm not talking about direct to vendor. You know, I'm talking about commercial agents. I'm talking about estate agents. And the best way to meet them is to go and view a property.
Yeah, it's more of the housing association ones, financial institutions and stuff.
Get on the phone to them. You're not likely to meet them initially, but get on the phone to them, find out who you need to talk to. Oh, something's happened. Ruby, something's gone off.
You're still fine. We can see you.
Oh, can you? Yeah. I don't know what that's about. Tell how confident I am. Help, Ruby, help. So it's all about, you know, getting a name of someone when you ring these places. Get a name, get someone you can then engage with going forward. You know, it's all about, you know, who do I need to speak to, please, da 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 da, you know. And then once you get a name, quite often it's a case of tracking someone down. So you get one name and then you speak to them, no, it's not me, you want so and so, and then, but you know, eventually you'll get there. So, and it's also the councils are another one, of course. The councils, we said still about housing associations, but of course councils sell a lot of property as well, awful lot of property councils sell. So it's a case of getting onto their property division and finding out what they've got to sell and all the rest of it.
Brilliant. I'm just going to read some questions from the chat. Yeah. So we had a question from Kalpna, and she's very thankful for the presentation. She's wondering what has been your most painful experience in terms of losing out of a deal, and how did you overcome it?
Say it again.
What has been your most painful experience in terms of losing out on a deal, and how did you overcome that?
Well, first of all, I would say we always, you know, everyone misses out on a deal sometimes. And we had a deal last year. We're paying £2.5 million for a deal in the Drury Quarter in Birmingham for 16 flats. And for one reason or another, we ended up in a contracts race, which I normally win contract races with another person. But for some reason, we lost out. We were, even though we were ready, even though we bid a bit more to get it, the other person still got it. So that tells you that it wasn't probably a fair fight. And of course, you know, like anyone, you're annoyed for a day or so, but you have to get over it. There's always another deal. There's always another deal. And you have to believe in your ability. You have to believe in what you do. And interestingly, I do with our joint venture fund, where we fund other people's, you know, we fund other people's deals they bring to us. So often they bring a deal and it's the only deal in the world, you know, for them. That's it. There's no, they're going to make it work come hell or high water. And that, of course, isn't the case. If it doesn't work, throw it in the bin and go and find another one that does. But they hang on to it because they feel they can't find another one. And that's just lack of confidence. There's no reason why people can't find another deal, you know, at all. So you've got to believe in yourself, you know. And I know it's not easy. I know it's not easy, but you have to try and believe in yourself.
Brilliant. Thank you. Loads of people wanting to know how to work with you. Just to say, I will put John's website link in the chat, because John doesn't really like IT. So I'll put that in the chat.
Thank you.
My seminars and his joint venture fund and things
that. Seminars are a great way to start, in my view. Form a relationship. I'm always trying to, you know, I'm always happy to help afterwards. You know, there's no upsell or anything like that. With us, they are what the seminars are, what they are, but certainly afterwards, you know, or before even, you know, I'm happy to try and help people if they've got a problem. And if they want more, they want to push on and do more, then we can talk about that afterwards. But there's no, you know, I've got my own property deals I'm doing. I'm busy with my, in fact, Tuesday we filmed the property graduate, the second series of the property graduate, and so on. So I'm busy doing my own things, but I enjoy helping people, I enjoy doing deals. I enjoy the joint venture deals that I'm doing. We're doing one in Cardiff with Imran. We've just done one with Talani in Kingston. We've got three or four others we're doing. So, you know, I'm busy, but I'm always happy to help if I can.
Brilliant. There's one question from Ben. Sorry, Jack, I'll just read this one as the last one. He says, how do you find property receivers? He says he's struggling to find the term on Google. Can you give another name to search companies there are?
I would say that most large accountants will have a receiver, an administrative stroke receiver involved within their practice. They are notoriously difficult to deal with, I have to say. They really are. But you know, they're helpful when they're very helpful when they need help, if you get my meaning. And when they don't need help, they won't talk to you. But I mean, it's just a case of keep going with them. So all the big accountancy practices will have a receivership arm to them. Yeah. all the big ones.
Brilliant. Yeah. And we've got the golden question, which you get asked all the time. And I'm sure you can guess. What is your thoughts on the possible potential recession coming and the space for commercial conversions to RESI?
Okay, so very, very, very briefly on the next 9-12 months, you know, ball, have they? But my view is that interest rates are going up. They could go up to 3% potentially. You've got inflation running at 20-25% on items that people need to buy every day. A friend of mine's a farmer. I haven't got any sympathy for them, by the way. But he said fertilizer was £200 a ton. It's now, 6 months ago, it's now £1,000 a ton, if you can get it. So that even hasn't been priced in yet, because obviously everything that's been grown has been grown. So the next crop, that's big, big problems. Someone did remind me, though, that in the old days, you know, food was a very large, the cost of food was a large percentage of someone's monthly budget. And of course, food's got cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And I think it's just going to get more expensive again. And obviously fuel and all the rest of it. I think we're in for a tough time, whoever's in government, you know, and the massive borrowings we've had because of COVID. It's almost impossible not to end up in some sort of recession, I think. It's how we deal with that recession. And I understand there's a shortage of property and there still will be a shortage of property. But in terms of buying property, what happens is, you know, people start getting nervous. They lose confidence in the market. And of course, if the building societies and lending institutions decide to lend less loan to value, that's the bigger problem if that happens. So I think we're in for, you know, if it plateaus, that's not the end of the world, is it? If it starts going down a small percentage or two, does it really matter that much to most of us? If we've got investment property, it might go down for a year or two, but it'll be back up again. I wouldn't worry. I would worry if you're halfway through a development. That's what I would do. That would be a concern if that does happen. I'm not saying it will, but I think you need to be cautious.